This is Generation Justice, a multiracial project that trains youth to harness the power of community through media, narrative, and critical consciousness. I'm Ariana Cordova.
And I'm Elijah Cage. We want to remind you that this program broadcasts from the rightful lands of the Tiwa people.
This evening, we bring you two educational interviews, community events, vaccine equity, and great music.
We speak with Lan Senna, policy director at the Center for Civic Policy, who gives us a health policy recap from this year's 30-day legislative session.
And as we enter the holy month of Ramadan, Imam Abdul Rauf from the Minara Islamic Community Center shares his knowledge about the importance of the ninth month of the Islamic calendar, Ramadan, especially during the genocide happening in Palestine. In 2011, Lan Senna was diagnosed with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma. She hasn't stopped fighting for policy changes since then to help fellow cancer patients and their families.
Now, we bring you a discussion with Lan, policy director from the Center for Civic Policy, about health policy in New Mexico, the paid medical family leave legislation, and her message to New Mexicans.
Here is Barbara Ramirez speaking with policy champion Lan Senna.
This is Barbara Ramirez with Generation Justice, and I'm speaking with Lan Senna, Policy Director at the Center for Civic Policy. Lan Senna was born and raised in Albuquerque and is the daughter of Vietnamese refugees that settled in Albuquerque in 1975 and 1981. She received her bachelor's degree in political science from the University of New Mexico and her Master of Health Administration from the School of Public Administration at UNM. Lan was diagnosed with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2011 and is currently undergoing treatment for her third relapse. Since her diagnosis, she has advocated for policy changes to help fellow cancer patients and their families. She advocated for pre-existing conditions protections at the New Mexico State Legislature, Medicaid buy-in, paid family medical leave, among others. She's a Founders Council member with United States of Care, a bipartisan group advocating for healthcare policy changes that stop families from questioning bankruptcy or their care. Lan Senna was appointed to Albuquerque City Council in March of 2020, where she championed policies that helped working families like zero fares for transit, language access, and paid sick leave. She served on the council until the end of 2021. Lan, welcome to Generation Justice.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Please tell us more about yourself.
Yeah, well, I got into healthcare policy because, as you mentioned, I was diagnosed in 2011, and it really gave me a pause to think about how I wanted to proceed in life. And switching majors from going into med school and completely doing a 180 and going into policy, because I saw that it was truly policy barriers that prohibited me from getting the access to care that I deserved, and really reflecting on my own family's perspective of lack of access to healthcare and how that impacted our communities. And so it's been my lifelong passion since early college years of advocating for our communities and really utilizing my lived experience as part of that and to uplift our stories and how it impacts policy, but also how and ways we can shape policy by uplifting those stories.
Thank you so much for sharing that. It's inspiring to hear about your personal story and all the work that you've done to better our communities. Tell us about your role in the Center for Civic Policy and why this is so important to you.
Yeah, so my role as policy director, essentially, my policy portfolio covers everything under the sun except for the sun. I always joke because we have our own climate and sustainability policy team. But I cover from healthcare to tax to budget to democracy to immigration, everything. And I like to tell folks that as a policy director, what I do is I translate everyday people's lives back to our policymakers and how it impacts our communities. And then I translate what our policymakers draft and create in terms of policy laws and resolutions back to our voters and to our communities. And so I have that true privilege and honor of being able to do so.
Thank you so much for explaining that. I feel like that's essential because sometimes there's a disconnect with communities and legislative processes because they're hard to understand and they're complicated. So it's really essential so that the community can continue to be involved at the policy level. What were some of the bills that you supported in the 2024 30-day legislative session?
There were quite a lot, as you heard, that my policy portfolio expands to everything, essentially. But I really wanted to speak to you all today in thinking about healthcare policy. As I had mentioned, it has a real special near and dear place in my heart. And something that when I first came onto Generation Justice was talking about the Healthcare Affordability Fund and the ability to imagine something that was more inclusive to all of our communities. And when I first got started in policy work, it's because my grandfather was diagnosed in 92 with kidney cancer and subsequently died when he was 64 in 1994 because of his healthcare accessibility was essentially locked out due to his documentation status. He was a green card holder at that time. And it's something that I thought about years later when I was diagnosed at the age of 21, and I was 4 when he passed away. And so thinking about my own healthcare story and how I was locked out of accessible healthcare, just like my grandfather was years later and, you know, generations later, really made me think about how can we change that. So the Healthcare Affordability Fund had passed about 2 years ago, and now HB 7, Stabilizing the Healthcare Affordability Fund, actually passed this year. And what that does is it's been lowering premiums for our small businesses by 10%, lowering costs on the exchange. We even saw an increase of participation on the exchange. And we also saw zero premium plans for Native Americans under the poverty line to access mental behavioral health. So we're seeing the benefits already. And we're continuing to see those investments. But what I really want to talk about is what didn't pass, and that was paid family medical leave or Senate Bill 3, and how that impacts so many of our communities. And now, you know, regardless of being able to access care, if it's affordable or not, if you don't have the ability to take time off and still question, you know, providing for your families, access to affordable care will still be a barrier.
Thank you so much, Lan. I want to ask you more about the paid family medical leave and why it didn't pass. But before we go there, tell us a little bit more about the history of health policy in the state of New Mexico.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that New Mexico is very uniquely positioned because during the pandemic, we saw about 45% of our population on Medicaid, and now it's more like 42 to 43%. We have a large population also on Medicare and employer-based insurance, but we really don't talk about the people who have been locked out, right? We don't talk about those that, whether it's because of documentation status, because they're making 1 cent over the federal poverty line that caps them out of Medicaid. And we truly saw that more recently with thousands of New Mexicans being phased out of Medicaid because of the unwinding of the public health emergency. So many of our communities already medically vulnerable and being you know, put in a tough position of whether or not they could afford care. I think through the Healthcare Affordability Fund and how we've been able to reduce costs of premiums on the exchange, we're seeing an increase in exchange. But now we're also taking those investments and looking at what else can we be doing? How can someone just making a cent over the Medicaid poverty cap can actually access this? So that's partly what we've been trying through the New Mexico Together for Healthcare. It's been a coalition of members across the state, rural, on tribal Pueblo communities, rural urban centers, to think about how else can we actually expand healthcare. And so that's been part of our history and thinking through it in a very nuanced way and actually meeting our communities where their needs are. So this past session, really investing and seeing those investments play out has really been like a real goal of mine. And so seeing it actually happen and seeing the benefits already and the investments back into our communities has been truly rewarding.
Absolutely. Now I want to talk about paid family medical leave and your analysis on what happened with this legislation this year.
Yeah, you know, this is not our first year in trying paid family medical leave. I think there is misinformation out there that we just started this. This has been an ongoing effort for over 5 years, creating task force subcommittees for years, and also doing statewide listening tours on some of the concerns and what would be best for New Mexicans. And as I said, you know, we can't pass policies without our community's input and really truly making the effort through coalitions of over 40 organizations and over 50 small businesses, and working to listen to the needs of our communities. But really, the sponsors of the bill, Representative Linda Serrato, Christine Chandler, Patricia Roybal Caballero, and Senator Mimi Stewart, championing this bill over the years and making the concessions was so important, but also in seeing that and how it died was truly, in my perspective, was that our communities just weren't listened to. The humanity that as part of this policy was not really respected. And we saw that on the day that the bill died. It was voted in its last chamber in the House, 36 to 34, and on Ash Wednesday and on Valentine's Day, and just how, you know, symbolic that was, especially for me. You know, on Ash Wednesday, we talk about how we came from dust and dust we shall return. And we really talk about mortality in that way. And yet those that are facing, you know, illness, chronic illness, death, weren't respected in that same aspect. When we even heard folks cheering as the bill died, and really it highlighted the lack of humanity that opposition to this bill really had, and not respecting our New Mexico families.
Wow. I'm still processing everything that you described about the day that it didn't pass. Thank you so much for providing that for us. Lan, will you share some of your testimony that you gave to legislators about this paid family medical leave?
Yeah, you know, this bill has been so close to me because I've been battling cancer for the last 13 years. And now I'm on my fourth battle, and more recently learned that the cancer is spreading. And we stopped chemotherapy. I had been on chemotherapy since 2018, essentially to buy me time. We knew that it wasn't curative. We knew that I would relapse again. So when I found out in 2022 that my cancer had come back and that truly very limited in my options for treatment moving forward, when the bill came forward in 2023 and it died in committee, I actually came up to one of the committee members that tabled the bill to say, like, look, I might not be here for the 2024 session, and this bill means so much to me that it's life or death. And they said, well, Lan, if you're not going to be here in the 2024 session, what does this bill mean to you? And I said, regardless if I'll see the benefits of this, thousands of New Mexicans will benefit from it. And that's what really matters to me. Well, despite all the odds, I made it to the 2024 session. But the cancer had spread and it's continuing to spread. So going up to committee, even after surgery, when I was conscious and they biopsied my lung to remove a tumor to send for clinical trials, being there 2 days later in committee to say that this is what it means to me. It's so important that I'm willing to come out of recovery from a major surgery to talk about why this matters, because if we don't have access to paid family medical leave, we are putting families at risk of dying alone, seeking treatment alone, or not seeking treatment at all because they don't have time to actually take time off of work while not worrying about paying for the medical bills or losing their insurance to actually access care. And I want to stress that paid family medical leave is for issues that are very serious, right? It's for chronic illness. It's like cancer. The bill was to address child bereavement. So if you lost a child under the age of 18, that you could have time to grieve. It was time for families having children, right? It's one of the happiest times also in your life where you're welcoming a new member of their family, whether you're the mother or the father, being able to have that time, but also expanding it a little bit, because for New Mexico, we know that we care for each other. And giving this the opportunity for New Mexicans to take care of one another when we are taking care of our grandparents, for example, as they're aging, or our grandparents are taking care of their grandkids and when they're getting sick. So this was truly to address some of our most serious issues and needs. And for me, as a cancer patient, not knowing if I'll be here for the next session, not knowing if I'll even get to see the benefits of this bill, but I knew that it was so important to share this perspective because they were not listening to our community members, that cancer patients were too busy fighting for their lives as they are, to go up to the roundhouse to share this perspective. And I knew I had that privilege, even though in sharing that I may not live to see next year, how important it is, because it is a situation of life or death.
Lan, thank you so much for being so vulnerable and for making an effort to go even when you were in recovery and tell them your testimony. And you've just worked so hard. It's admirable. I want to thank you because you think about others. You're so generous. And I can hear in your voice how you care so much about everybody, that you said even if you don't benefit directly from this bill, you want for other people to benefit. And that's just so selfless and so beautiful to hear.
Thank you.
What do you wish legislators would have acted on in this past legislative session?
You know, one thing I think about and how our framing of New Mexico has been in the past is that we always say, oh, New Mexico is so poor. You know, we have such high poverty rates. We have so many communities in need. But for me, I want to highlight that we saw the most money we have ever seen in a budget session. We have seen records amount of revenue. And so it's clear to me that we're not poor, we're just disinvested. And so we want to see more programs that are investing into our communities to truly address our needs, whether it's criminal justice, whether it's access to healthcare, whether it's public infrastructure, but also, as you heard, for paid family medical leave, as this fund was created to support all of our communities, thinking that through and addressing our most vulnerable communities, right? I'm often asked, you know, as it relates to paid family medical leave, well, what about our small businesses? For me, it's weighing whether we should support some of our chambers and these big corporations that lobbied against this bill, or a mother of a two-year-old who's been battling leukemia, who has to question whether or not she can be there for her child as they're going and receiving care, and her partner having to quit med school because they need to be there as a full-time caregiver. You know, these are the things that are weighing on me, and the things that I think we should be putting at the forefront is that right now we're currently weighing whether or not we should support our most vulnerable, our sick, and our dying over profits. And I think that's the better question, is why.
You mentioned some really important points, and something that really struck me was that we're not poor, we are just disinvested. And I think one of the things that people saw was that in this year's session, we had like a lot more new money than in past sessions. And so the money's there. It's just, where are we allocating it so that New Mexicans can benefit and live a healthy life and with dignity and compassion? We're getting close to the end of our conversation today. I want to ask you, what is your message to our community?
That our lives are worth it, that we are constantly put in a position where we're having to question our worth, whether it's, you know, what should I sell and put up with to afford my care? Should I sell my house so that I have the ability to afford treatment? Should I continue to go to work or take time off unpaid or quit because I don't have access to paid family medical leave, just to take time to coalesce? And I believe that our lives are worth it, that we should be able to invest in our communities, that if we're seeing records in profit, not just for our state, but for our corporations, that our lives are worth investing in and supporting. And so I think that that would be my overall message. But also, you know, because our lives are worth it, I'm going to continue the fight for as long as I can.
Thank you. Where can people find more information about the Center for Civic Policy?
You're welcome to look online. We have our social media. We also have our own website. We are the convener of the Civic Engagement Table as well. So we are involved with 40 plus organizations that work across the state that work on civic engagement issues. So issue education and just get out the vote. And of course, as we come up to an election year, you heard policies that really impact our communities are really on the line come election.
Thank you. Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we wrap up our conversation?
No, I really think that's it. I really do appreciate Generation Justice and Barbara for you interviewing me and giving me this honor and privilege to highlight, you know, New Mexico family stories and my own story, especially, and how it impacts our communities. Just want to say thank you and very, very humbled to be here.
Thank you so much for saying yes to be interviewed with us and for all the work that you have done for New Mexico. I think that you're so inspiring and I look up to you. I thank you for all the hard work, but at the same time, I think land shouldn't have had to work that hard and still so many of these battles for these bills that are for justice and health equity in our state have not passed. So I'm like, I admire you, you're strong, but at the same time, you should be with your family, like resting, especially after recovery. So I just have so much gratitude, appreciation for you, admiration, and I just want to say that I thank you for being here with us.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I don't regret a minute of my time, especially when I'm advocating for New Mexico families. So thank you.
For Generation Justice, I'm Barbara Ramirez.
Thank you so much, Lan, for sharing so much about the work you care so deeply about. Your strength and determination are truly admirable. And I also want to thank you for helping us to understand your story and how it influences your work.
Our guest, Lan Senna, chose his next song for you. After the Storm by Callie Uchis, featuring Tyler the Creator and Bootsy Collins.
Ramadan is a holy month of worship, study of the Quran, and fasting for our Muslim brothers and sisters.
To talk to us about the meaning of Ramadan is Imam Abdur Rauf from the Minara Islamic Community Center.
Imam Abdur Rauf has over 44 years of experience studying Islam. In this conversation, he will also give a message about the genocide happening in Palestine.
Here is Barbara Ramirez speaking with Imam Abdur Rauf.
This is Barbara Ramirez with Generation Justice, and I'm speaking with Imam Abdur Rauf from the Minara Muslim Community Center of Albuquerque. Welcome to Generation Justice.
Welcome. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Peace and blessings of God be with you.
Thank you so much. Please tell us more about yourself and your journey with Islam.
Let me tell you a little bit about my history. My parents are Cuban immigrants. They came in 1954 from Havana to Spanish Harlem. I was born in Spanish Harlem in 54 and was raised Catholic, went to Catholic grammar school, Catholic high school, and then I went through that period where I just didn't believe in anything per se. I always had a little bit of belief in God and the Creator, but I just was kind of lost and into drugs and things like that. But one of the gifts that my parents gave me was education. They sent me to good Catholic grammar schools, Catholic high schools. I went to Bishop Lachlan Memorial High School, and we lived in the Fort Greene Project. So my parents were pretty poor, but they spent all their money on the kids to give us an education. And so I had a good enough grades and had gotten the opportunity to go to Cornell University, and it was accepted there for studying geology. And in my third year, I met a good friend in college. His name was Hisham, and he introduced me to Islam. And for me, Islam was interesting because it was a continuation in many ways of my Catholicism. But at the same time, it really focused me in belief in one God, gave me the discipline of prayer, which took me out of a lot of different things that I was doing at the time. And at that point, I want to say it was 1979, I took my Shahada and I became a Muslim. Two Sudanese brothers gave me my Shahada.
Thank you so much for sharing more about your story. It's inspiring. Tell us more about the Minara Muslim Community Center of Albuquerque and your mission.
Okay, Minara Muslim Community Center, we're not a masjid or a mosque. A lot of people think we're a mosque, and they, some people trip over that, but we're not. We set out to be a community center that provides activities for Muslim elders all the way to Muslim youth. Our primary mission is to help feed the homeless of Albuquerque. We have a homeless feeding program every Wednesday where we go out. We prepare about 150 lunch sacks, and then we deliver them to the people on the street. So we actually go physically on the street and feed folks. But Minara itself, we have religious programs. We have Juma on Friday, which is the Friday service, which is open to anyone. We have religious classes that we give all the way from Introduction to Islam. Right now we have a class on Thursdays about the four rightly guided caliphs, the first four leaders after Prophet Muhammad died. We also want to have sports activities specifically geared towards youth. We have, and young adults. We have judo on Tuesdays and Thursdays here in the social hall. So we have Sensei Lorenzo, who's a 6th degree black belt, who teaches, and then I'm a 4th degree black belt Jim is a fifth degree, and then we have a whole number of black belts that help to teach that class. So again, these are classes that are open to the community that we have, and they're competitive. And then we also have an archery team that meets on Sundays at 11 o'clock at the archery shop. And again, we compete. We have I'm so proud of the ladies this year. We had two ladies that took both of them took second place in different categories in the nationals. So we have a pretty good team, a pretty big active team. We have state champions, and I'm really proud of these. But really, we're a small community, we provide a small service, but it's really geared to religious activities for elders and for youth. And then we also have the sports activities. And again, the vision that we have is to try to provide food, clothing, and help to the homeless people of the city of Albuquerque. This is really how we started, and then expanded from there. And we're presently leasing space on the Unitarian campus because it was really hard for us to find space, and it's very expensive. And they graciously offered their space at a good price that we could afford. So we share a part of the campus here. We do our services and our judo here in the social hall. We prepare our lunches for the homeless in the education building. And then archery is actually in the archery range just down the street, so which makes it really convenient.
Thank you so much for telling us more about the activities and the resources that you offer. It's really essential. Thank you. Imam Abdur, please tell us about the five pillars of Islam.
Well, the five pillars are the fundamental foundation of al-Islam. The first fundamental pillar is what we call iman, which is belief. Belief, we believe that there is one God. He's not human. He's not male. He's not female. He's not of this earth. He's not made of matter or energy. He is distinct from the human being, distinct from his creation. He's all-powerful, all-knowing, all-existing. We believe that he's the God of Adam and Eve. He's the God of Noah, Abraham, and all of the prophets that we believe in, all the way up to from Jesus, Isa alayhi salam, all the way to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon them all. So the first belief is really that is the first pillar is iman, believing that there is one God, that he has no partners, that he doesn't have a son or a daughter, and it kind of distinguishes it from Christianity in that sense. We believe in the angels, we believe in the books, the Torah, the books, the Sabur, which is the book of Prophet David, peace be upon him, the Anjil, which is the Gospels of Jesus, and then the Holy Quran of Muhammad. And then we believe in the Qadr and the will of Allah, that God is what he created everything. He's all-powerful, all-knowing, all-existing, and that he maintains all of this, and that there will be a day of judgment, and Jesus will come. A lot of people are like, what? Jesus will come? Yeah, Jesus will come. Not Prophet Muhammad, but Jesus will come to announce the Yawm al-Qiyamah with the angels, and then everybody will be judged. The second pillar is the pillar of prayer, which is we call Salat. And as Muslims, we have five formal prayers. We have the Fajr prayer, which is before sunrise. We have the Zuhur prayer, which is afternoon, early afternoon, Asr, which is in the late afternoon, and then when the sun sets, there's Maghrib, and then in the late evening is Isha. And these five prayers are mandatory upon every Muslim to complete them every single day. They take about 5 to 10 minutes, depending on which prayer. And we're in that prayer, we're praising God, we're worshiping God, and giving thanks and things that people do normally do in prayer. But those are the five mandatory prayers that is part of the Salat. Then the third pillar is the pillar of Ramadan, where we fast either 29 or 30 days. We don't eat Between sunrise, eat or drink between sunrise and sunset every day. So it's not like we're starving for 30 days. So from before the sunrise and after the sunset, we don't eat or imbibe in any type of drink. It's a walking prayer. It's a time of peace, a time of tranquility. It's a time to give of charity to people. So the fourth pillar is the pillar of zakat. And zakat is kind of like those that are familiar with tithing. It's where we give 2.5% of our income to the poor and the needy. So after you pay all your bills and everything, and it doesn't come off the top, but after you pay all your bills and your family's economic status is stable, then 2.5% of your profit, I guess, that you have left over, you take that, and that specifically has to go to the poor. It doesn't come to the imam, it doesn't come to the mosque. Those monies generated have to go specifically to the poor and the needy and the homeless. And that's something, again, that's incumbent. All these pillars are incumbent on Muslims. The last pillar is the pillar of Hajj, where if we can in our lifetime, if we have the health and the wealth, to go to Saudi Arabia, to Mecca, and to make the pilgrimage, which is kind of a reenactment of Prophet Ibrahim's life. There's certain things in there that kind of reenact Prophet Ibrahim, peace be upon him's life. But if it's possible for us to go, we try to make it once in our lifetime. So those are the five essential pillars of al-Islam, and those form the core of how we live our life on a day-to-day basis.
And you spoke about Ramadan. Today, as we're airing this interview on Sunday, March 10, is the first day. Tell us about the meaning of Ramadan.
Well, Ramadan is, for the Muslims, again, it's one of the pillars. It's one of the foundational acts that we have to do in worship of God. It's a form of worship where we give up food, drink, and actually we don't have relations with our wives or husbands during that time period. And then after the sun sets and we can eat and drink, but we try to do it in a manner where you're just not reversing the day. You know, you're not just going, okay, I'm gonna not eat during the day but eat all night. So it that's not really what Ramadan's about. Ramadan is about sacrifice, giving up a certain amount of food so you feel that hunger. And in feeling that hunger, hopefully that gives you a connection to the poor and the needy, like the people of Palestine. I mean, this Ramadan is going to be pretty important and a big dhikr, a big remembrance, in that there are literally almost 2 million people that are at the edge of starving to death. So it's important for us to remember them and to remember the hungry in our country, the homeless in the street, and the hungry around the world. It's also like a walking prayer, but during that whole time of the day, we really dedicate our thoughts, our prayers, our actions, even work or play, we dedicate them toward as worship towards God.
Thank you. You mentioned Palestine, and there's a genocide happening right now as we speak. Why is Ramadan so important this year?
It's so important because, one, as I mentioned, it's a reminder of the hungry. The Palestinians right now are literally starving to death. 35, I believe it's a bigger number, but 35,000 to 40,000 people have been killed. 50% are children, 25% are women, needlessly slaughtered, bombed, and now being starved to death. Ramadan is an important time to remember the Palestinian people, to number one. Number two, to pray to God for peace and a ceasefire, some solution to that, but also to act in some way. How can we help the Palestinians? It's very difficult right now to help them financially because no money's going in and out, but it's important to remember this Holocaust, this massacre. It's very much like Rwanda. It's very much like what happened in the Bosnian War. It's very much like, unfortunately, some people are not remembering what happened to the Jews in the Holocaust. These slaughters of human beings that happen because of political gain or political grabbing of land. You know, there's many, we've seen this throughout history. It's very important for us to remember what's happening, to know what's happening, and to spread the word of what's happening, because that's the only way. There's a lot of misinformation being put out there, and it's only the only way to really help to change people's hearts so that somehow we can come to a ceasefire, not even just a ceasefire, but a cessation of this war, of this conflict, and hopefully a solution so that the Palestinians can have a homeland, inshallah.
Thank you so much. What is your message to our community during these times that the world is facing these atrocities and violations?
Yeah, it's, boy, that's a, not that it's a tough question, but it's a very important question. You know, during these times when things are difficult, we are told to immerse ourselves in our religion. What that means is immerse ourselves in worship of God, immerse ourselves in prayer to better our own situations and the situations of others, to act so that there's justice. There has to be justice. We can't just pray and be people that hide in a corner, but we have to somehow be in a position where we can enact justice, even if it's just amongst ourselves. We may not be able to do anything for the people of Palestine directly, but we can help the hungry and the homeless here on the streets of Albuquerque. We can help people that are striving and having difficulty. We can help Palestinian families that are here, that have families there, to remind them that they're not alone, that they have our support. And it's very important for us as Muslims, for me as a religious leader, to remind other religious leaders, whether they're Christian or Jewish, that this is an unacceptable situation, that there has to be justice for the Palestinian people, and that they have to look within themselves as religious leaders and look within their scriptures and within their communities to try to do something to make the situation better, even if it's just giving correct knowledge, even if it's just praying for justice for people who at this moment are just being slaughtered. I have an analogy that I use that I from our own scripture, and it's also in the Christian scripture and in the Torah, where the Jews, we call the tribe of Bani Israel, just got released from Pharaoh, from the tyranny of Pharaoh, the tyranny of 400 years, which I liken to the Holocaust in Europe. And they saw the miracles that Moses performed. They saw the splitting of the Red Sea, the closing of the Red Sea on Pharaoh's army. And then they stopped at Mount Hur, at the mount where Moses went up to get the scripture, the law that they were supposed to follow, the law of love God, worship God, love and care for one another. And when Moses came down, they were already worshiping the golden calf. And I feel very strongly that that's a good analogy of what's happening, that the tribe of Bani Israel, instead of choosing, and it's not all people, it's just, it's the present government and the policies of the IDF, but they're, instead of choosing the scripture and the law and of God and the love of God and the love of humanity, they've chosen the golden calf of the land and resources to their demise, because that's what's going to happen. There's no good end for them in this situation unless they come towards peace and some kind of ceasefire.
Thank you so much. One of the things that you mentioned that we can do is share correct information. We are in an era that disinformation and misinformation is spread so rapidly, so I thank you for all the information that you've shared in this interview. Where can people find more information about the Minara Muslim Community Center?
We're in the process of building a webpage, which is not there yet, but you can go to our Facebook page, Minara Muslim Community Center. That's where we list all our activities for the center. Also, there's conversation there and things like that we have. People are welcome to our classes. Our religious classes are free, so anybody's welcome to come and join those classes. Archery is free. We provide bows and all the equipment, so anybody interested in archery is welcome. The team's kind of big now, so we're being a little bit selective, but there's still some space. Judo, the same thing. Judo, it costs, you know, a monthly fee, but again, it's open to the community. And then just visit us. One of the places to come is come to Friday Juma. It's given in English. And again, it's the regular Juma that all the other masjids are having. And we welcome people to come and join us to pray in religious service. You don't have to be Muslim. If you're just curious about Islam, you can come and see what a Muslim religious service is. And then hopefully we'll have a website here up shortly. So.
Is there anything else that you would like to add before we end our discussion today?
I'd like to thank you for giving us a voice. Muslim voices aren't always voices that are being heard or asked to be heard, so I thank you. Thank you for that. I strongly ask all people, all American citizens, to really look at the real situation of what's happening in Palestine. This is history that you're witnessing. You're witnessing a Holocaust in and of itself. And there has to be some solution towards it. I don't know what the government, you know, approaching the government and protests and things. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to really, but the main way is educate yourself about the situation. Go through the misinformation and really understand that there are 2 million people right now that have been completely bombed out. If you see any of the pictures of Gaza, it's just a complete ruin. It looks like pictures that I see of Hiroshima, of Dresden. There are no schools, there are no mosques, there are no churches. Churches have been bombed. This is not just a Muslim situation. It's a Muslim and Christian situation because there are Christian Palestinians. Very clearly, the people are roaming. I don't even want to say streets because there aren't even any streets left. People are just roaming the land without food, starvation. They're close to starvation. Please push and pray for peace, for a ceasefire, and for a solution that the Palestinians may have justice and a land in which they can live. And pray for our Jewish brothers and sisters. Again, there are many, many Jewish people that are protesting this. It's not a Jewish-Muslim situation. It's a situation between the right-wing Netanyahu government and the governments before that have the same Zionist policy, apartheid policy, and the policies of the IDF and how they fight war against men, women, and children.
Thank you so much. The information is out there and the truth is there. It's our responsibility to educate ourselves and learn because there are so many lies and propaganda being spread. Thank you so much for speaking with us today, for educating us about the pillars of Islam, about Ramadan, and for the message that you gave to the community of the things that we can do. It's easy to think that there's nothing that we can do, that we're hopeless, but there's always something to do, even if it's prayer and even if it's helping the communities that are in need here in Albuquerque.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And God bless you and God bless the audience. And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, Imam, for your concern for the homeless and for your words on justice. It's important that we enact justice, as you said, especially in times like these for the people of Palestine. Thank you for your words of inspiration and wisdom.
The Manara Islamic Community Center is hosting Ramadan activities. For more information, you can visit them on Facebook at Manara Muslim Community Center of Albuquerque. Our next song is Ramadan by Rauf and Faik.
Ramadan, Muhammad, Muhammad.
Welcome to this week's community calendar, everyone. We're excited to share some upcoming events with you all. What's first on our list?
Up first is the monthly Transcenders Gathering at the Stone Age Climbing Gym Midtown. This month's session will be taking place on Sunday, March 17th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m.
This event takes place after the gym's hours to provide trans and non-binary folk a safe space to try some climbing. The gym is located at 4130 Cutler Avenue Northeast.
For more information, you can contact 505-341-2016. Again, that's 505-341-2016.
Next up, we have the Pueblo Baseball Stitching Our Community Together exhibit at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center.
This exhibit will be honoring and highlighting the important legacy of baseball among Pueblo communities. Hear powerful stories and see memorabilia from the past and present of Pueblo baseball.
Again, this will take place at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center at 2401 12th Street Northwest on Thursday, March 14th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m.
For more information, please call 505-843-7270. Again, that's 505-843-7270.
And that's all the amazing community events we have to share today. Don't miss us next Sunday with more calendar information.
It is time for our weekly vaccine equity segment. We'd like to remind you of a few important safety measures.
For the first time since 2021, the CDC has loosened its COVID isolation recommendations.
The CDC has released that people will no longer need to stay home if they have been fever-free for at least 24 hours without the aid of medication and their symptoms are mild and improving.
Please remember that you can be contagious with COVID for about 10 days after you have symptoms or test positive. So please mask, stay home, and follow safety measures to protect others.
The CDC also recommends that adults ages 65 years and older receive an additional updated 2023 through 2024 COVID-19 vaccine dose.
Most COVID-19 deaths and hospitalizations last year were among people 65 years and older. It is important to mask, wash your hands, test, and stay home if you are sick. We need to protect our elders and the most vulnerable.
Vaccinations are one of the best ways to protect yourself from serious illness, hospitalization, and even death.
If you are not currently updated with your vaccinations, visit vaccinenm.org and schedule an appointment. Make sure you stay safe and protect your community by washing your hands frequently, wearing a KN95 mask, and practicing social distancing.
Tune in next week for more vaccine equity and COVID updates.
We hope you've enjoyed this hour of community action. We'd like to thank our guests, Lan Sena and Imam Abdulrauf.
Tonight's hour of radio was produced by Roberto Rael and Barbara Ramirez.
We want to give a big shout out to all of our youth producers. We could not do what we do without you. Generation Justice would also like to thank KUNM for bringing the voices of young people to you, KUNM listeners.
Generation Justice is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, with additional funding from the N.E.E. Casey Foundation, the New Mexico Department of Health Infectious Disease Bureau through the Better Together Coalition, the McCune Foundation,
as well as Media Justice, the Santa Fe Community Foundation, and of course, all of you, who have contributed to our project by visiting our website and clicking donate.
Our opening song is Youth of the Nation by POD. I am Elijah Cage.
And I'm Ariana Cordova. Coming up on KUNM is Spoken Word, so stay tuned and join us next Sunday at 7 o'clock.
Good night and be safe.